Welcome to Share a Pint, where we tap into the craft beer scene. I'm Jerry Holla, your host.
Today I'm talking with Simon B. and Brian Van Den Oever from Red Bear Brewing Company. Thanks for being on the show, guys.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You guys are located in what used to be the U-Line Arena, where the Beatles played their first U.S. concert in 1964. Share a little bit about the history of this place and why you chose it.
The history of the place, it was designed and built by, his name is U-Line, his last name is U-Line. He created it for an ice hockey rink that premiered the first hockey league in D.C. And the building that we're in is the old ice house that produced the ice for the rink and then to sell it. He also sold it for like ice chests and whatnot.
This was, pre-refrigeration, basically. Pre-refrigeration.
Back in the day. It's had a couple iterations. It did that for a while. He owned it for a long, long time. The Beatles played here. It became more of a stadium, had all the bleachers and stuff like that. They used it for a lot of different venues. And then it kind of went out of use, and it was kind of a derelict building. The actual arena component used to be a parking lot. People would park in there. And here, it was just a derelict building. And then Douglas Development bought it and gutted it and renovated it.
Oh, okay.
And then that set the scene for us to look at it and sign the lease and have Red Bear here.
And this was basically a big concrete cave when we first came in here. Like, there was no drywall, no nothing, just concrete all the way around, and that was it. So
it was,
we built out pretty much all of this. So.
It was, nine pillars, no, more than that, 12 pillars and a concrete floor, and that's it. It was wonderful. And we could do anything we wanted to.
Yeah, that is
literally.
Great.
It was great. It was a blank slate. The only thing that was a little bit weird was all the columns. That kind of throws some curveballs as far as architectural design.
But I think we did a great job in utilizing the space as much as possible with the layout it was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we'll shoot this so that our viewers can see it. I mean, it's very, very pretty. Used a lot of wood. It has kind of, I spent some time in Minnesota in the northern area, and so it has that kind of lodge feel, which I really like. Were you?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Pipestone, Minnesota.
Oh, I spent about 3 years in Bemidji.
Okay.
So and that's what I liked when I came here. It had that really warm, earthy lodge feeling. I liked all the wood and the warmness of it. And so I understand that you built a lot of that, or a lot of what's here.
So a lot of it was kind of part of our branding because we're all from Seattle, so we wanted to bring a little bit of the West Coast, Pacific Northwest sort of feel out here. But I did a lot of the work myself. These tables I built, all of the back bar where you see all the mountains and stuff, I built all that.
Cool.
The menu boards.
The back bar,
a few of the other little odds and ends, like the host stand over there. So we did a lot of the work ourselves.
Awesome. That was fantastic.
Most of the woodwork you see at Red Bear, Simon built.
Yep. And it all pretty much came from Baltimore. There's a reused materials place up there that we sourced almost everything.
Okay. And it's a really large space. I mean, 7,000 square feet? I mean, so it's not one of these things where we were recently talking with Ty at Hysteria, and he was saying, hey, my recommendations would be don't go small and think about expanding. He's like, expanding is harder to do than people realize in a brewery, you know, to go from, you know, 3-4 barrels to 10, 15. He's like, go big, grow into it.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought when I thought about your guys' location is I'm like, obviously you were thinking about using a lot of space, whether you could do it initially or not. Tell me a little bit about that.
So when we started looking around in D.C., and we looked all over the district, we wanted to be in the district and as urban as possible with the community. That was the things that we wanted, and close to the metro. Those were the criteria. Close to the metro, in a community, and as urban as possible.
Okay.
And we looked for about a year, a little over a year, I think. And we were looking for about 4,000 square feet. And many places we found had a couple of the items that we wanted, but it was failing on the other ones. But we were very persistent. We're like, we will find the perfect space. It takes time though. And, we saw this space in April of 2017.
Okay.
And it met all the criteria. It had the metro line 300 feet from the door. It Noma is now a budding and blossoming community. This used to be a very warehousey industrial. It's definitely turning into more of a neighborhood to be in. and it is literally right next to downtown. So it's very much what we were looking for.
Yep. Also, a few other things too, like the ceiling height was really helpful. Let's see, what else? The fact that it had a historical background was something that actually we were looking for. We wanted something that had an interesting, unique history.
Oh, cool.
But why we chose the layout and how much each section got.
Mm-hmm.
The brewery is taking up, what, less than a third of the space?
Yeah, it depends on whether you count the cold storage or not.
The brewery space takes about 1,100 square feet. The kitchen takes up another, what do you think?
It's probably like 1,500 probably.
1,500 square feet. And the rest is tap room. Because we knew we wanted to fill this out as many people as possible.
Okay.
Yeah, selling direct to our customers was pretty much our, basically our business model. Yeah. So.
Okay.
And when we first set in our brewery, we had two 10-barrel fermenters and two 20-barrel fermenters.
Okay.
And we quickly expanded into three 10-barrels and three 20-barrel fermenters.
Wow.
Yeah, literally.
We did that within the first 2 months.
I think it was like 2 weeks after opening, we were like, oh, crap,
we need more. But we are now at max expansion in this space. We cannot put any more fermenters anywhere. We would be cutting into our tap room.
Okay.
But what we're producing is more than enough that what's going out of our tap room, and we are able to do distribution as well. About 40 barrels a month.
Yeah, so basically if you want to talk numbers, we produce about 120 a month, and we generally go through about 80 of that in the tap room alone, and then basically the leftover is what we do for distro.
Oh, okay. That's great.
Yep.
Go ahead.
The other thing I wanted to state is we knew we wanted a kitchen, and we knew we wanted to do a brew pub model because food and beer just go hand in hand. And we decided to give it enough room for it to do whatever it needed to be.
Right.
We are not restaurateurs. We did not quite. We knew we wanted food, but we knew we had to bring on that talent to make ourselves a well-rounded brew pub. We also wanted the model of a casual dining experience. We don't have servers. It's not. There's no reservation for a table.
Mm-hmm.
It's come and go as you please. Order at the window at the kitchen. Order the beer at the bar and take up whatever space you can find. It's a very casual dining and drinking model for this space. It's like a beer hall.
Yeah.
But we were also very dedicated to having a stage for live performances to do all sorts of fun things.
Okay.
That'll be the draw to bring everybody.
Cool.
Yep. Essentially, we wanted it to be an experience, whether that be like an eating experience, beer drinking experience, or a show.
Okay.
Well, you ask your employees to know or learn ASL so that they can communicate with the deaf community that makes up a large part of this NOMO neighborhood, particularly with Gallaudet University just a few blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
Explain to us why that's important to your mission of inclusion, as well as your commitment to making Red Bear a community space.
Inclusion and community are part of our core values.
Okay.
From the get-go, we knew that we wanted to be a place that anybody's welcome here. Anybody. That includes the deaf community and hard of hearing community. So we, from the get-go, we asked our employees to start learning basic ASL.
Okay.
At every pre-shift meeting, we go over signs that you typically sign during an average workday. Like, if somebody orders a beer, what would they do? We've also made conscious decisions on how our menu board would look, so it's easier to do that. That's why everyone has a number or a letter and a number, so it's easier to order. If you, instead of spelling out twinsies, you can just say six.
Number six, just to keep it simple just make it as accessible to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Also, all of our tables are ADA height, except for the far back tables are a little higher. Our bar is high, but we have two sections that are at ADA height as well. We have no steps in the space except for the stage.
Okay.
So We also have two ADA compliant bathrooms. So we tried to look at every facet and how can we be as inclusive as possible. We are also developing a Braille menu for our beer. We're doing what we can.
And how's that reception been so far? You've been great. It's almost a year that you've been open, so.
Well, because of this, we are now hosting DC's only ASL trivia.
Cool.
It's all done in ASL. Now, they do have English interpretation of ASL, mm-hmm. so anybody can come and enjoy it. We also hire interpreters for some of our events that are mainly spoken. When we do panel discussions or something of those nature, we always hire interpreters for that. So anywhere, anytime we can do it where it's mostly spoken, we will have that interpreter. And we're open to expanding it as long as enough of the community is interested in that event.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, speaking of inclusion, your DC is only 100% gay-owned brewery. Talk about why that's an important part of your identity, and then share with the listeners some of the events that you regularly run that are going to help people embrace and showcase the LGBTQ pride.
Well, I'll take that.
I'm going to say that one's definitely more your...
well, we are, just by default, LGBT-owned, just because the three of us owners are all gay men. It's important because... We are part of that community, and it's not traditionally, the brewery industry is not traditionally known for its LGBTQ-ness, or it's or any minority group. It's not mm-hmm. known for being that, mm-hmm. So which is very important because the industry is looking to change and open the doors to anybody to enjoy beer and be a part of the community, mm-hmm. and so we are just a step in that direction. Just by being. And so when we make decisions on our events or our marketing or our message, it has that element of we're also talking to the gay community, mm-hmm. the LGBTQ. You can see that we have the pride flag up. When you first walk in, you see it. Mm-hmm. We have the trans flag up. We have the bear flag up. We are acknowledging these are people in the community as well, and they're welcome here. Mm-hmm. We're doing that right when you walk up. You see that.
Yeah.
But also we do it by creating a space where drag performances can be. We have drag shows. We have drag bingo, events like that. And that's important because we allow all types of drag performances. Not just queens, not just kings. Drag them, trans, drag, all of it. We've had them all. Every subtype of drag has been on our site, which is very important because most people see drag as just it's men in women's clothing. And
sure, you essentially think like RuPaul, basically, right. Like mainstream. Like,
yeah.
But there's more to drag than just like RuPaul. There is a cornucopia of drag.
All sorts of interesting
performance.
Yeah.
We have a residency of Billy Wynn. He's a pop performer, songwriter, and artist, and he performs once a month here at Red Bear, the third Thursday of the month. He's also in that residency. He's bringing in other LGBTQ musicians and artists to be a part of that as well, and that's on our stage. So we've done a lot of that. We have Pride events the whole week of Pride. So we definitely are leaning into the LGBTQ.
Well, you have a truly impressive number of board games. I mean, there are some breweries that have some board games and some things to do, but I mean, it's well over 100 different ones there. So talk a little bit about that part of the brewery, why that was important.
So there's different elements of each of the owners of this. Mm-hmm. I'm a little more focused on the beer. That's kind of my thing. Brian's a little bit more focused on performances. Our third partner, who unfortunately can't be here today because he's out of town, but that's his thing. Like, he is all about board games. He actually has more board games than that wow. in his own personal collection. Wow. But it was something that was really important to him as being part of the whole Red Bear experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just one of those core things that we built into what we wanted Red Bear to be. So we just kind of went with it, and people love it, so we will definitely just continue.
We all put our passions into this, individual passions into creating this. His was definitely board games. We had whole meetings on the length of the table so you could play board games.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Something you might not normally think about, but yeah.
Yeah. Because yeah.
I was thinking more along the, you know, the German beer hall type of thing where you're saying longer tables, more people, more continuity. Well, yeah,
there
was
a board game space. Too, but yeah. You get long tables, but they're actually very shallow.
Yeah.
But we made it so you should be able to put any board game on the most of our tables and be able to play a full-scale game on them. And our variety, it's not just checkers or yeah. Monopoly. It's the in-depth games. It's the new games. We go on to Kickstarter and back games and get them before they're released.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So yeah. One of them recently is Parks. It's a Parks of the Board game.
Yeah. I remember seeing a tweet about that. You're trying to find that.
Yeah. We actually retail it here. So if people want to pick it up, we actually sell that game.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And we retailed it before the retail stores had it.
Nice.
So that's the level of passion we have for the board games. And people love it. Every day we get board games checked out, and it's a great way to come in, try something new, mm-hmm. and it's something more to do than just sit and drink. You can sit and drink and do something amazing and with your friends and dominate them or... or whatever, just play a friendly game of
it. It really all comes back to like the community aspect.
Yeah, that's for sure. Absolutely. Well, where can people find you guys online? Facebook, Instagram, Twitter?
We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. It's at Red Bear Brewing is what we are.
Also, our website, www.redbear.beer.
It's dot beer.
Yep. Dot beer.
Nice.
.com.
Oh, you guys pulled off a good one there. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I've seen one other, I can't remember who it was, one other vendor that had a dot beer as well.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, we'll make sure that we put that on our show notes and on our website at sharepintpodcast.com.
Awesome.
We've learned a bit about the brewery. Now let's get to know you guys both a little bit better.
Okay.
You know, Simon, Brian, take your time and tell me about each of your roles here. You've touched on it a little bit, but a little bit about what it is that you guys specifically do here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll start. My name is Simon B. I'm the Director of Brewing Operations. So essentially, I run one third of what this business is, which is producing the beer.
Uh-huh.
That means recipe development. It means the day-to-day stuff like ordering the hops, scheduling everything, making sure that spent grain is taken care of. Like, there's all sorts of stuff like that that you don't really think about with beer production, but.
Your quality in-house maintenance man.
So
you fix anything that breaks?
Pretty much.
See, that's like Rob at Checker Spot. That's what Rob goes, I just fix things because they break all the time.
That they do, yes. My past life was actually in property management, doing maintenance. I used to run high-rises, so I pretty much have been thrown into the fire for fixing just about everything you can think of.
And we
so.
Love you for it.
Better. But no. But anyway, so that's kind of my background on my past life, which is something that I can bring to the table here. But really just like production, dealing with distribution, basically running all the high level stuff for beer production.
Okay. Great. Brian?
What I do is a little bit of everything. My title is the Director of Business Development and Marketing.
Okay.
And so I do all of our social media. I have help with some of my staff. I focus on our branding, our imagery, working with our artists to create all those things, all of our posts, making sure I do all the event coordination. I bring on the talent and I create the framework of what the event's going to be, how it's going to run, all of that stuff. I maintain website stuff that includes the events. I do anything that we do public facing, basically. I do all the public facing work for the most part, other than like Simon, he made this happen, which is great. So that's what I do primarily here at Red Bear. And this had nothing to do with my life before Red Bear. I was a nuclear medicine technologist at one of the major hospitals in Seattle.
Okay.
I did that for 11 and a half years. And before that, I was in the Army, Reserves, and then college. So that is one other thing that we didn't mention. We are also majority veteran-owned.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Okay. I'm a veteran of the U.S. Army. Mm-hmm. And then Cameron, our third business partner, he is from the Air Force. Ooh, there's a couple other facets to Red Bear, just yeah, I did nuclear medicine, did this. And then Cameron, our third business partner, he does all the financial, the financials, the permitting, the legal stuff. He does our HR. He does all the bookwork.
Basically. All that fun paperwork stuff. Oh, yeah. Somebody's got to do that.
Yeah.
He was actually, he's uniquely suited for the role because he was a flight test engineer for Boeing.
Well.
And so his job was way more technical and very, very paper-driven, paperwork-driven, spreadsheet,
right.
Paluzas. And
of course, everything has to be perfect with that when you're building airplanes. Right. Right. You cannot mess up. So.
Attention to detail.
Very detailed.
Attention to detail is astonishing.
Wow.
So we definitely have the trifecta. We've got the technical, physical work that Simon does. We've got the bookwork. Detail-oriented project management of Cameron, and then we've got the creativity, artsy face of the company with myself.
Which is what Brian, yeah.
Nice. So we definitely have that trifecta. We came together in Seattle. Mm-hmm. I've known Cameron for 15 years at this point, and I knew him the whole time I was in Seattle, basically. And so we quickly became friends. He actually came over at board games. He invited me over to his place with friends to play board games. Okay. Soon after he met me, he's like, oh, I do board games. Come on down. So I did it. Just, you know, mm-hmm. That was fun. And then I met you about 5 years later.
Yeah.
And we just developed a friendship as well. I introduced you to Cameron
at
one point. Simon was already going to move to D.C. anyway for personal reasons. And at that point, I was already looking at either transitioning into management or looking for a new career path. Mm-hmm. But I had this crazy idea of helping him out because I could get a veteran loan, a small business veteran loan through the VA. So I asked him if he wanted a business partner because when he was going to move over here, you were going to start a Nana brewery.
Yeah, it was most likely going to be like one barrel or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember at one point we were doing a car trip together, and I was telling Brian all about it and how I planned to move everything. And yeah, like he said, he called me the next day and was like, hey, do you want a business partner? So, of course, if you have more people involved, it's like you want to go bigger. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it quickly went from, oh, this is going to be a nano brewery to a 10-barrel brew house.
Yeah. Well,
and so you talk about how you guys met, but, you know, how is that? Did you guys all decide from really different walks of life to say, hey, we're going to get into craft beer?
We were all looking for something to do, something new to do in our lives.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was definitely something we all were interested in already. Like, Brian and I actually met at Elysian over in Seattle quite frequently because we both lived very close to there. So we would frequent the tap house there, like, quite a bit. And, in fact, some of our business plan probably happened in the tap room there.
I was a regular at the Elysian Brewing Company on Capitol Hill, the first Elysian Brewing Company. Mm-hmm. It's a brew pub. I definitely gleaned ideas from that model that they did. They started with a brew pub, they expanded to more brew pubs, and they just kept plopping them in the same city.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what, like 20 years ago, where there wasn't the expansion of so many breweries around the nation or in Seattle. It was a model that definitely worked. And they just got bigger and bigger and bigger. In fact, I that's how I learned to love craft beer was from their beer and their space. And I loved it so much that I, in Seattle in Washington State, you have to be licensed to be a bartender. I got my bartending license just so I could help them at their beer festivals.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I did that for 3 or 4 years while we were doing all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely something that we were all interested in, and then kind of basically we're at points in life where we were like, we can jump into something like if we're going to do it, let's do something that's fun and that we're into.
Like, well,
so,
how insane is this?
Yeah.
Let's look look into this. And how insane
it turns out very.
It is very insane.
Not just doing it, but moving to the the other side of the country to do it.
Yeah.
Not doing it where
that's
you're comfortable.
That's the audacity of what we did.
Yeah.
We didn't just do it. We did it as far, almost as far away as we could. In the same
like 2,600 miles away, yeah.
Literally all of most of the early planning with the bank and stuff like that happened in Seattle.
Okay.
I sold a house. We all sold a house, actually, to help get this off the ground. And so we definitely, we quit careers, we sold houses, and we moved across country to get this operational.
Well, that segues nicely into talking about maybe what some of your biggest challenges are, and maybe you've kind of just started to touch on that.
Yeah, you kind of have to be all in.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you're gonna do this, like
you
gotta jump in.
But you can't. You have to be tenacious, though, too. You can't just take no for an answer. You hear it all the time. Don't take no for an answer. You try to make that no a yes, or get around the no, or maybe the no doesn't even exist. So there's many ways that. Something as complex as this, there's a lot of barriers. You just got to figure it out. Figure out how you get over it, under it, around it. Does the barrier even exist?
Okay.
You know, so.
And keep pushing.
And
like,
keep pushing. Keep the conversation going. And again, I want to put a big T on my arm in the tattoo for tenaciousness. We were super tenacious.
Yep.
And no was not no. Mm. We were not accepting that. We got some major no's too. Like,
oh yeah,
we had a major,
there were a lot of roadblocks.
We had a major bank was like, oh yeah, we're into this, up to the point of, hey, we're gonna sign a lease. Oh, we're not into this.
Yeah, it was
like,
there was like one minor thing in the lease that they didn't like, and they were just like, nope,
we're not
gonna
do
it.
Wow.
So
yeah, and at that point we're like, hey, we're pretty much all into this. So we'll find somebody else then.
Yep.
So then, how did you stay committed during those difficult times?
Again, it's that kind of like you're all in, so your back's against the wall and you have to. Like, there's not really a choice.
I know
like,
for myself that I quit my career and I was doing well in my career. And I knew if I stayed in it, that always that hesitation. Mm-hmm. Well, I could stay. Well, if this falls, whatever.
Well, yeah, of course, the safe path versus...
So I consciously chose to end that career and then move out here as well.
Mm.
We didn't have anything signed. We didn't have a bank loan yet, but I was committed. And that just made me even more committed, more like in. I am in. We are doing this.
Yeah.
This is happening.
And no alternative.
Yeah, pretty much.
You have to succeed.
Yeah, I had to succeed. I know you had already moved here.
Yeah.
You were already down that path as well.
Yep.
So I definitely took the plunge as well. And then a year later, Cameron took the plunge, and he moved over here as well. So that it was just...
Yeah. It was kind of a slow pilgrimage.
yeah, it was 3 years. Every year, one of us moved out here.
Okay. Well, being committed and being tenacious, that's a big part of it. But is there anything else in particular you guys felt like really contributed to your success?
The space, working with some amazing companies like our architectural firm, 3877.
Yeah, they're amazing.
They helped us out. We had never done this before. They really guided us through the process of designing the space.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But then also helping us with how does the next step go, and construction and all this. They just were great.
Yeah, what are you going to expect?
What can we expect? They helped guide us. Also, I would say Lisa Murkowski, she was our real estate agent. She really would let us know, this is probably not the right space for you. We would see it, but she's like, probably not the right place for
you. Oh, and do you remember how many places she showed us? It
we
was like
60, 70.
It was like quite a lot, she stayed in it, and I was a little surprised that she didn't get done.
Dispirited that we, it was like a no. But then also we weren't letting it be dispirited because like, let's keep seeing more. And so I think that helped her want to keep doing this because we were so passionate about it. And that was the thing. We stayed passionate about it. We're doing this. This is happening.
Yep.
So, it was easy to lose heart, but we didn't do it. We grit our teeth. We're gonna get past whatever was happening at the time. So, other challenges.
I think we got a lucky on a lot of things.
There was definitely luck on our side, but it's the stuff we didn't know about, like a lot of the regulatory stuff. There's a lot of pieces to the puzzle there. There's a lot of timetables that we didn't just know about. At one point, we're like, okay, this specific license might take 2 months, or it could take 6 months. Somewhere in between. Who knows?
Yep.
We're like, that's
dealing with state,
a weird
federal,
timetable.
Like, yeah, just yeah, things with the city.
Well, you are
like
our nation's capital. There's going to be a lot of political red tape to get through.
Yeah.
We anticipated, but it was substantial.
Yeah.
It was substantial. And we worked through it. We were tenacious. But those were the moments. Some of those were barriers. We're like, how are we going to get past this? We have to open. We're about to hit rent. We can't wait 6 months to get this license.
Yeah.
We can't wait 2 months to get this license. We got to get this license tomorrow.
Right.
So
another thing that was kind of weird too was a lot of it was stop and go. Like
yeah.
It would be like, hurry up and wait.
Oh.
Wait and wait, and then oh my God, get all
you
of this stuff done
yeah.
in 2 weeks. Like
you got to have this stuff done in 2 weeks, or you're going to miss a window. Or so there was a lot. We've definitely put a lot of work into this, and just making sure we hit all the targets, all the deadlines, all the things. And then you would have these moments of nothing's going to happen for 4 months.
Yeah, and you're just kind of like, what can I do? And you start going stir crazy a little bit, and you want to get into all the stuff, but until
there's so many times we wanted to dig into, like, let's make cans. Let's do can art right now. That was like 3 years ago. I'm like, that makes no sense.
Right. But I mean, you get kind of stir crazy when you're just like waiting for a lease to get signed or whatever.
That's the
like,
hope there, right? You can do those fun things. You can start naming beer.
Mm-hmm.
3 years before you make the beer.
Yeah.
Some of the names we have right now are from way back in the day. When we were just sitting down, the three of us, around the table.
I think DC Dirt, the one you're drinking, was like probably the first one we ever made.
Yeah.
Even back in like homebrew experiment stage.
It's good. But that's the fun. The creative side, I think, kept us going.
Oh, that helps.
Because that's the fun part, right?
Yeah. Well, again, share with people where we can find you online.
We're at on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We are also at redbear.beer online.
Okay. Well, like I said, we'll put that up on our website at our show notes.
Awesome.
Well, Simon, Brian, I want to thank you guys both for sharing a pint with me.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Prost.
Share a Pint is released bi-weekly on Friday mornings and can be found at shareapintpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at share_pint. Show notes for this episode are available at shareapintpodcast.com. Music for the show, Groundwork, provided by Kevin MacLeod, and can be found online at incompetech.com. Share a Pint is made possible by help from the Community Media Center of Carroll County. Associated with the craft beer industry and have an interesting story you'd like to share on a future episode? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at shareapintpodcast.com or email us at jerry@shareapintpodcast.com. Until the next time we share a pint, I'm Jerry Hulla. Prost.